And yet, a reunion has to be reuniting of people who believe the same thing and getting them back together in fellowship. Unless you are fellows together, true fellows together in all areas, you cannot be in fellowship, even if you break bread together. Even if you don't break bread together. If you do everything else together, but you are not able to come to an agreement at the table of the Lord, you are not in fellowship in any way. And as hard as it is for me to say, and as much as I hope I would never have to say it, I have had to try to decide within me whether or not people of the amended fellowship are my true brethren. And there are times when I'm not sure that they are. But I will continue studying. I will not say until I'm sure that they are not my true brethren. But it's harder at the moment for me to feel that, because I feel that there are definitely basic doctrinal differences.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon. Just as a comment on that in relation to this proposal, at least on the part of the three of us, is being proposed on the premise that we essentially are brethren, and that is an underlying premise. If that was not true, we wouldn't bother. No use playing around with it. That is our premise. So as long as you understand where we're coming from, let's see now. Has a couple of hands over here, Liz?
What I'm hearing is that everyone here is basically here because, to at least a certain extent, we don't want to really have what happened. And we might have some confusion as to our views on the other side. We see that there's enough validity to try to make it happen. So based on this, I look at the three brothers at the front. If they have really put in a full effort, and they have done their homework in their own proposal as they see it. You may not agree with it. You may say, well, this is more amendment-sided than unamendment-sided, and I can't live with that. But they've done their homework. And so as I see it, what they're proposing is, let's just put out a proposal, and let's see what people come back. And then it's all of our turn to sit down and make up our own proposal, do our homework. Because if we really believe it, then let's make the work, let's make the time, and come up with how we think it's going to happen. It's really easy for us to criticize other people's work and say, well, I don't agree with that point, maybe that one, but I don't agree with that one, and leave it at that. Well, if we really believe it, we're going to work at it, and we're going to let this go out. Even if we think that it has absolutely no foundation, at least it's making people come back and work and try to come back with something that they can live with. And that's the start. So, in a sense, I see that we don't even need to go through and say the majority part of this we're agreeing to. Let it go out and let people think as to how that they're going to make reunion happen.
Well, okay. See, there's a couple of other hands. Who else has their hand up? I may have missed some of you, and I'm sorry. But Walt, did you have your hand up? Because I saw a hand in that direction, and I wasn't sure who that was.
Well, most of it has been said.
And then Dan will be up next.
Okay, I perceive that we are getting reasonably close to the time if we're going to decide to send this out or not. But I think there's something that has to be done before that. And that is that in order to send this out as a proposal, if we do, we need some official basis for it. I think we should, officially elect a committee to deal with it, to send it out, to receive the data, to process it, to be responsible for it. Before we make any decisions, I think we should pick a committee.
No,
why don't we do that after we conclude?
You can finish all the discussions, but before you send it out, you have to have...
Oh, before we send it out, yeah.
You send it out,
right,
okay?
Yeah, okay, right, you're right.
Don't bother electing a committee.
It's 2:30 now. Why don't we have a break, 15 minutes, and... you can talk amongst yourselves a little bit. We'll come back, and then maybe we can wrap this up and come to a conclusion.
discussions, there have been allusions or actual overheads showing some suggested changes, well, not actually changes at all, just suggestions to create a final unity proposal, quote and unquote, maybe I should remove the word final, but in the sense of the final draft to be submitted to the community in unamended community in California. And if you have the paper suggestions for unity, suggestions for final unity proposal, there were some on the table in there. This will be a little backwards from what you've got. It just had to do with how it fit best on the paper. But these are the suggestions that we're taking them all together. That we would like to recommend be incorporated in the unity proposal voted upon by the brethren in California. These are the suggestions that concern letters of assurance and the proposal itself. And you have already seen the suggestions for the fellowship clause and the implementation procedure. Now, turning over to the back page 2 of this form, very quickly, you have the unamended letter of assurance. In discussions with Ken and his committee, they said that there was a sentence in here, I can't remember if I deleted it in. The sentence that moved had to do with the sentence concerning the principle of responsibility. And I'll come back to that when we get to the overhead on the proposal. But they suggest that if that sentence could be moved over to the proposal itself, that this would facilitate matters. We didn't just move that sentence. In moving it over, we basically fit it into the proposal so that it would have all the balance that was meant to have. If this were to be accepted, then what you have as the subsequent paragraph is just the two sentences that were there before and that middle one removed. So it simply says, we wish to assure you that we believe covenant relationship initiates a new relationship with God that entails greater privilege and responsibility. That while we believe this, we fully acknowledge that responsibility begins with an awareness or understanding of God's revealed will, not baptism. We do not believe or teach that baptism is a prerequisite for resurrectional condemnation. That is how the unamended letter of assurance would read. And the second to last paragraph, the large sixth paragraph that begins with concerning our relationship, but not until his own blood was shed, Ken brethren felt there was no reason that could be just simply deleted. It wasn't necessary to ask this. Well, it will come to the proposal. Yeah. I know this is a little confusing. There will be, if you approve all of these suggestions and the implementation, etc., then you'll get that full package in the mail. So then you'll have that opportunity to look at the whole thing. Now, to the amended letters of assurance, they've made some very helpful additions and changes, which I want to bring to your attention. The first is on the paragraph that begins, we in the central ecclesias wish to assure you. I've just basically picked up the part where the change comes in, which is your second sentence. We who have entered into a covenant relationship with God through Christ are in a different relationship from all others. Our relationship has changed because we have consciously accepted the teaching of God and, here's the change in addition, have entered by belief, repentance, and baptism into his family, and have committed ourselves to the higher responsibilities and obligations of service in his house. We who have been blessed with such a high calling recognize that we will have to give an account of our service and our works in the light of the covenant we have made. Those outside the covenant will not be answering for how they lived in light of the covenant, etc. So what it does is it amplifies the importance the amended community places upon covenant relationship and wants us to recognize that they understand the higher responsibilities and obligations. They have also added in, as mentioned before, a paragraph that states that the judgment of the baptized and the unbaptized at the same time and place is not at issue here. It's not a first principle issue. It is consistent with what occurred in England, where, as I read earlier, I read from the final statement in England, where the unamended community at that time expressed that very concern that they were being asked to believe this. And this is simply a repudiation. No, we're not, no one is being asked to believe this. This is a matter of opinion. It's an uncertain detail. But these issues up here belong to the baptized. Time and place is not held to be a matter of detail.
Not being asked to believe what? I didn't understand that.
This is, all they're saying here is that the resurrectional judgment of the unbaptized rebels, when it will occur and where it will occur, is not believed to be a first principle. No one is saying you have to believe with the household. They're just saying that their concern is a principle, not how God is going to work out the details of that principle. Brother Wright?
Again, should I say, if the subject is mentioned, then it has to be defined.
But
the very fact that now that you put it on the table, could mean that we could believe that it was at the, they were to be judged with the household, but then they would be, they could be judged with the household.
Well, that's right. It's a lot.
And we open up an arena which very much concerns the unamended community.
I mean, there would be an objection that a person was believing truth that didn't fit him for salvation because he believed that
somebody
on baptized household, right, somebody outside the household would appear in Sinai along with those in covenant. You're saying that that is a matter of first principle belief? And that you know for certain that they won't appear there?
I'm going to think about it, but that statement says that it does not matter.
It's not believed by us to be a first person. That's right. It does not matter. It's not essential for salvation for us to believe that the baptized and unbaptized will not be at the same time and place.
No, that's what the amended are saying.
That's what they're saying.
Oh, that's what it comes down to.
You bet.
It might be a come up, Brother Ed.
Well, yeah, absolutely. That's the way I meant it. Yeah. No, I didn't mean that in a derogatory sense.
I understand.
No, I think
that's not a concession, that's an admission.
Whatever it is, it's consistent with 1957 when they said the same thing. When they had the final statement, it was written into their final English statement. Well, now it's in American context.
But it doesn't apply to the people who are appealing to.
You mean outside California? What do you mean?
North America is different than the English one.
So what are you saying? This doesn't address the concern?
It just reveals it supports an already existing concern.
Well?
Yeah, there are those of us who do not believe that those outside the household will pay full penalty judgment to deal with those within the household pay. So I think what Ray is saying is that opens up a...
Well, what this is meant to say is, because there are some brethren, you know, the unamended have heard that, as Ed is saying, that, well, yeah, they will be at the same time and place, and that's a basis of fellowship. And all that Ken is trying to say, if that's what you've understood, that's been a grave misunderstanding. No one has ever wanted to make that detail a basis of fellowship.
I wouldn't go quite that far. I think that was a grave misunderstanding. But at least it's not been anything that I've understood in my lifetime the truth. But thinking about our conversation a few minutes, you know, earlier, lunch or what have you, I pulled out our statement of faith and took another look at where it appears. And it does appear right in that paragraph that specifically calls out the judgment seat of Christ.
Yeah.
So you would have been quite justified in coming to the conclusion, if you didn't do anything but pick up a statement of faith and look at it, that was, you know, a big issue with us.
That was why it was put in the final statement, in the letters that were appended to it.
Well, in what
the subject sheet, rather,
one of these recent publications from CMPA that they make an issue of that they understood the issues that were facing the household at that time, and that this was put in there for that specific purpose.
I'm sorry. The CMPA clearly understands this because they were the ones that were involved in that 1957 reunion, and it is their essential document that we quote.
53, I'm sorry.
So, anything that you've read from them, I don't think the reason it should be understood that way. I just what you're referring to.
Well, I know they said that they couldn't compromise the responsibility.
That's right. Responsible.
Because
responsibility to
its relationship to the
Eastern
Sacrifice of Christ.
Responsibility to a resurrectional condemnation is one thing. Responsibility to that resurrectional judgment being at the same time with the two of them standing side by side, that's not an issue. What is an issue is the other.
Just the principle of resurrection.
The principle of resurrectional condemnation. Responsibility or resurrectional condemnation, that's the principle, not the time and place of such condemnation.
Let's move on so you can see, we can look over the rest of these. On the section that deals with the Sunday school student, they've just pluralized it, if you like, as opposed to make it individual. We assure you that it's not the practice of our Sunday school teachers or instructing brothers to tell their pupils or friends with certainty that they are responsible and now will be raised for punishment. And their brethren felt when they reviewed it that this would help, that made very clear. They can't obviously guarantee what everyone would do, but it certainly is not their practice. Now, at the end of the amended amended assurances, there are the... I'm sorry, Sharon, go ahead.
I'm not reading through the whole paper. You skipped some.
This one here?
The rest of that paragraph or the
draft? The rest of this paragraph was already in there before. I'm just trying to highlight the parts where there have been changes. Again, we went over this one before. I don't want to read it right now unless you'd like me to. You can see what part was changed. Last time, I threw up essentially the same sentences. They've just done a little editorial cleaning up on it. And this paragraph was the same. So this is you've already seen this. Now, the changes in the proposal actually aren't changed. The one was from the unamended was the asked if they could bring that sentence over, that would help. Another thing that was asked last time, could we have references, please? And so we tried to accommodate both these concerns by, first of all, putting in references on each of the clauses, recognizing that brethren will argue even over the references, but there is some educative value in the references and even in the sequence in which they are quoted. The one change, not in substance, but just in form, is to take that sentence, and Ken asked if, because I just put that in this paragraph, and I said, can you put in the paragraph that reads like a donkey or a camel or something, right? It just doesn't read well. You're saying the same thing twice, and that it's too confusing. So eventually, in talking this over, we came up with basically replacing the first sentence with the similar statement that was in the letter of assurance, except where it said resurrectional judgment, we put the more preferable word, condemnation. So God holds a person responsible to resurrectional condemnation based on his knowledge and understanding of God's revealed will, when his circumstances are such as to leave him without excuse. And then the second sentence, which says, only God knows who fall in the category of that operative principle and would be raised, you know, that disclaimer is still there. That's God's prerogative in the matter. But it holds the balance, and the advantage is that before this, which as Tom expressed it last time, for all of us, I believe, up here at any rate, was a very critical sentence, phrase rather, when his circumstances are such as to leave him without excuse. For me, this is a personal expression, this made the clause something I could agree with. I could read scripture and acknowledge the outworking of this principle, because this said possession of mere knowledge wasn't the basis of resurrectional condemnation, but the idea that there is understanding and there are circumstances of which together, Lorraine?
I don't think that's a complete thought. I think you're not saying who this group are. God holds a person responsible to resurrectional condemnation based on his knowledge and understanding of God's revealed will, when his circumstances are such as to leave him without excuse. Without excuse for what? I don't think you're really pinpointing. Do you know what I'm saying?
Leave him without excuse in terms of what he's doing?
Yeah, there's something left out of there that's not really pinpointed. You're just saying people are held responsible. It sounds like it could be anybody, you know.
Okay, so the question is, it should be a completed sentence, is without excuse to what? Because they didn't obey or something like that?
Well, yeah, you're not saying who this is. And you're just saying a person.
You need to define that specifically. Yeah. What circumstances, you know, when or what person? Apparently,
I experienced what Lorraine was getting at one point, trying to think it through, so I know what she's getting at. Do you understand what she's getting at?
This is attached to the paragraph before it, right?
Yes.
It's not the qualifying sentence?
In a certain sense, it should say, like the previous one did, that God holds such people responsible.
Yeah, they have to be qualified.
So,
hey, don't muddy the water.
Yeah, I know, it gets worse and worse, but I see what that's what she's saying.
But this is a quote, isn't this a quote from Robert here?
No.
It is not a quote from Robert.
No, it's very close to from Robert.
To Robert's.
We've been trying to pick up on that paraphrase, and you're right, we are muddying it up a bit, and it is critical because it is, as Jim's pointing out, the way it originally was something that we had CMPA not only agreement to, but they worked long and hard in getting that out. All day it was spent on that one sentence.
But this would pass muster with CMPA now?
Well, we think so. We're primarily doing this to enable us to sew things up in Southern California. Because we wanted to simply move it verbatim from one to the other. That's what we wanted to do.
If you moved it around and said, and this may pinpoint what I'm saying, based on his knowledge and understanding of God's revealed will, God holds a person responsible to resurrectional condemnation. That doesn't make sense. When his circumstances are such as to leave without excuse, without excuse for what?
Well, you know what?
You see what I'm saying? There's no possible
obedience. Oh, okay. The reason for that is, I suppose, is this is where Brother Roberts phrased it. As a certain, leave them no excuse for such refusal.
Now, he's got those who refuse subjection to
right.
the will of God.
Right.
A phrase like that needs to be in there. Do you see what I'm saying?
Or, as what he's getting at is, when you go up the one before, God holds a personal level of resurrection and judgment based on his knowledge, that then you don't have the presupposition of the condemnation. And then you don't have to say without excuse for what, because the outcome is left open because it's a judgment, theoretically.
You've got a very open sentence there without pinpointing who it is that's having any qualifying.
That'll have to be corrected.
Yeah.
You don't have any.
That's the less defined, the better.
No. You're making a real blanket statement there. A real blanket statement that doesn't say anything, really, indeed.
Okay, but you do appreciate whether this should then also say, without excuse for his refusal to submit to the will of God.
I say who the person is, or who the group are, or what they're doing.
Well,
but you're not saying what they're doing when the circumstances are such as to leave them without excuse for what? If anyone wants to.
Right, okay, your point is taken.
Okay.
But where is that even a proposal? I'm trying to find what.
This is the responsibility section. S-T-O-N.
Late for the day, yeah?
Typical on the men that they can't even spell
words. You better get that one in because I endure enough of yours. Brother Marco, you have a comment to make in the midst
of this? Basically, the same question that Sharon asked. A little difficult to see this part here, and then trying to figure out where it's going to fit here.
This is the responsibility section.
I'm aware of that. Okay. But you've got, after judgment of all others, in the responsibility section, you've got a major vital principle.
Are you deleting that, or adding it below it?
You've got an overhead of the original proposal.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you?
It's hard to see where it fits.
I sure wouldn't mind getting their reaction to the camera.
Fine.
Oh, that's out the camera. Yeah, that's out your camera.
Second here, please. That's the original.
Right. That's what we've got right now.
Now, the reason that we even come up with the suggestion is Brother Ken, in conversation with some of his brethren, they said if they were able, if the unamended would feel comfortable bringing that one sentence from their assurances about responsibility to judgment and put it in to the proposal, it would help them. You know, it's just one of those things. Just like, some brethren felt that they would be helped if there was a switch in word order. So, Ken asked, to put this before you, and this is what we've done. After I told him I thought that it was a camel, then we took the sentence and made it work.
Turned into a donkey. That was vitamin. Review that again, Ted. Where does it appear there? Or where does it go?
Okay, here it is. The letter of assurance is here. We believe that God holds a person liable to resurrectional judgment based on the knowledge and understanding of God's revealed will when his circumstances are such as to leave him without excuse. Now, we made that statement. That statement, rather, is in the assurances. They were asked if they could take that in. See, it doesn't make sense there either, does it?
No, it still doesn't.
So that's the problem.
Yeah.
But they asked.
Not really.
It does make sense.
It makes sense there, Laura. I mean, from the standpoint that.
What, 24?
If you read the whole thing, it says.
Well,
Hard when you have the floor to be whispered. Read the whole thing. I think it makes sense that the way it is. At least it did to us at the time.
Brother Ed, you want to?
Right.
Can I tell you why I would delete that from the unamended letter of assurance? May I tell you why? Is that relevant?
Relevant to me.
Sure. Okay. In 50th Psalm, he says, the Lord says, but unto the wicked God saith, what hast thou to do to declare my statutes, or that thou shouldest take my covenant in thy mouth, seeing thou hatest instruction and castest my words behind thee? And Brother Thomas makes the point that the wicked are those that cast their words behind them, not necessarily just one of many objections of it. Arise, O Lord, disappoint him, cast him down, deliver my soul from the wicked, which is thy sword, from men which are thy hand. O Lord, from men of the world, which have their portion in this life, and whose belly thou fillest with thy hid treasure. They are full of children, and leave the rest of their substance to their babies. As for me, I will behold thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake. So the wicked are those who may know his word, but cast it behind them, and they have their portion in this life. And they will not be raised, as Paul said in the 6th chapter of Hebrews, or of Romans, that when you were the servants of sin, you were free from righteousness.
Well, that's true, Brother Ed, but the problem there is that it doesn't address the question of resurrection responsibility, whether it is or isn't possible. It simply says we have a portion in this life. And I don't see that either of those texts is really relevant to the question.
Well, Pharaoh, Nebuchadnezzar had their portion in this life.
Right.
Yet, and they certainly were without excuse as far as their handling of the children of God. And said, O Lord, I'm the Lord of the Sabbath.
Yeah.
You know, but by thee only will we make mention of our movement. They are dead. They are deceased. They shall not rise. Therefore hast thou visited and destroyed them and caused all thy number to perish.
Yeah.
However, in contrast to them, thy dead men shall rise.
Right.
Together with my dead body shall they rise. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in dust. But we, being not believers in immortal emergence, know that between the rising and the standing with Christ, the nature of Christ, there's the judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I can't believe that the person outside of the covenant is going to be raised for judgment. He has his judgment. God is judged. He's already condemned.
Marco, you're if you talk about it in terms of circumstances, either that person without excuse, it seems to me there's a lot of interpretation for what in the world that could be.
That's right.
But I think perhaps if you put it as we all agree it should be in God's hands, and you can state it such, you could say, for example, we believe that God holds a person liable to resurrectional, and you're saying that's condemnation now?
Not just, I prefer that, yeah.
Condemnation based on his knowledge and understanding of God's revealed will. If
God's righteousness and justice for the man.
Well, that's contradictory. I mean, the point is the articulation of a principle upon which God's justice is exercised over unbaptized men and women. And the principle is that of an understanding that they've got of His will. But it's an understanding, it's not in the abstract. It's in conditions that make a claim upon Him. And He realizes that His rebellion against this light in the true biblical sense of it, not in the possession of knowledge, have left him, that his rebellion now is, as Jesus says, they are called evil, right? And it's the grounds of their condemnation, because they have responded this way, because of the circumstances in which they were put in by God. So, all this is stating a basic principle. It is not trying to articulate how God is going to work out all the details, which is a very important. We went through a lot of struggle personally to come to grips with some of the demands or the things that amended brethren were asking of unamended brethren.
And that's not sure why you say it's a contradiction. I don't think it's a contradiction.
Well, either you have a principle upon which God operates or He doesn't. To say if He will operate is saying you don't know if He does or doesn't have a problem.
I didn't say if He will operate. I said if His righteousness and justice so demands.
Oh, we do have that. That's in the very next sentence. In the proposal. The very next sentence says something to that effect.
Yeah. Only God knows who among the dead in every age are guilty of disobeying His commands and will require a resurrectional consultation. Yeah, it does state that.
It's the same thing,
but it says only God knows. It's subject to His...
No, that's what only God knows. All I'm saying is that God will act upon His righteousness and His justice as God demands it. It's very possible for God to take a man whom you described as a sublime rejecter and out of mercy not raise him.
Right. Then those circumstances are such that God does not deem him.
But it's based on His righteousness and justice, not on the circumstances.
Would it be more merciful for God to take somebody who did submit to baptism and hold him responsible to the judgment seat of Christ when he put forth a good effort and not, in his mercy, raise one who rejected it and was never baptized? Would that be more righteous of God?
Well, it may be more righteous in our eyes, but it's, God is going to judge that one, not me.
Well, the issue is God is going to do what is right. All we're seeking to do is to establish the common ground of belief as to what is the operative principle as God expresses Himself and his ways among men. This is simply a reaffirmation that God deals with men in terms of justice, His own judgments, if you like, on the basis of their knowledge and understanding of what He desires them to do. Yet the qualification of the circumstances is to interject that it's not just sheer knowledge, as if head knowledge somehow is the issue. The words of Jesus in John 15, for example, that if I had not come and spoken these words which none other man ever spoke, they would not have had sin. Now we might have said, well, maybe God will or will not hold them responsible. But Jesus says they are responsible because I've spoken these words. And then he went on and emphasized and said, if I hadn't done these works among them, which none other man had done, they would not have had sin. So the grounds of their sin, brand new sins now, which have been committed, to which God was going to hold them guilty, and apparently in a resurrectional sense, was their refusal to hear those words and to heed those works that he did. Now those are circumstances. In those circumstances, God's righteousness was expressed, yes. But those were the circumstances, and that's the intent of that phrase about circumstances. They left them without excuse. They could no longer say, a man, and in John, end of chapter John 9, Jesus said, if you said you had no sin, you still would have been blind. I mean, if you said that we see,
is that we don't see or something. If you said we don't see, that would have been fine. If you say that we do see,
sin remains.
Then your sin remains. Blindness was no longer the case in their presumption. And so the circumstances, again, their sin was based upon their response to the light of God as it was manifest in the Lord Jesus, in his words and in his works.
That was because God's righteousness, who is Jesus Christ, demanded so.
Yeah, Mark, well, it's all an expression of that, but it's still the circumstances in which he puts them. If he hadn't put them in those circumstances, as he said, they wouldn't have been sinners, and they wouldn't have been held responsible for what they did.
All I'm saying is, you know, we keep declaring that God is in God's hands. We keep saying that God's going to do right, and yet we really don't trust that he will. And so we want to have to clarify it or classify it as such. And I see all we need to say in the statement is, you know, God's justice and righteousness, if God's justice and righteousness demands, then that's what will happen. But if it doesn't demand that, then it won't happen, no matter what we say about it, no matter what we think is right and just about it.
Fine. But no one disagrees with that.
I don't think that's ever been an issue between.
Never been an issue. We're trying to deal with things that are an issue and try to clarify the things that are an issue.
Okay, it's 25 to 5. I want to keep you aware of the time. In the interest of, I guess, expedience, is it desirable to change that point there, as Marco was suggesting,
well,
or do we go on from there?
I can make one recommendation. Brother Jim Land has put up what it would look like with that addition in here. We can go through this. If this appears to be acceptable and you'd like to go ahead with it, fine. If you feel that it isn't, but you feel that the problem could be resolved, then you certainly could make that, create a committee and ask that committee to work with these brethren and work out the problem. Going with what he has said here, a major Bible principle covering the liability to condemnation of such is based on the rebellion or disobedience of enlightened men who knowingly reject the counsel and commands of God, just as before. God holds a person liable to resurrectional judgment based on his knowledge and understanding of God's revealed will when his circumstances are such as to leave him without excuse. We do not believe or teach.
That's the wrong one.
I do?
You don't have the right next sentence.
No, he doesn't.
I pulled it out of the problem.
You missed
it.
Oh, you missed, yeah, this one is.
You skipped down a line.
Yeah, couldn't you just insert the word disobedient in that other one on page 2? God holds a disobedient person responsible, and then that would make sense. Would that?
I'm sorry, let me just get it. God holds a disobedient
person responsible. That qualifies who the person is. Would that do it?
Okay, you would suggest the word, where I see it going in interest of time is we're getting some good suggestions, and I think the best thing to do instead of trying to create another camel here that has seven humps, we can
work it out
if the general principle
is okay
to include in the proposal. Now, remind you that doesn't mean that it's okay in terms of what you believe, but in terms of the proposal, work it out. What I'm saying is you have to eventually vote as to what you do, you know, believe should be an acceptable basis.
I wonder if all of us are willing to be judged by Christ on the basis of what we have written.
I guess each man will answer for that when they vote on the matter, Mark.
Well, I think that's very critical because I must understand. One of the things that God does is he judges us by the way we act and the way we talk.
Yes.
And if in fact this is what we're going to hold men to, then this is probably what he will hold us to. In which case, I wonder how many of us know God as Jesus did.
Okay.
And our responsibility of resurrectional judgment is based upon knowledge, knowing God.
That's right. I want to get it's not a time for exposition what that word means. So.
Well, I'm not.
So there is.
Would it be possible to do like the FOU brethren have done? They've sent out a proposal and said, will you agree with this? Is this enough? If not, then what?
Yeah.
And then let everybody handle it in their own way. This way, we're obviously, if we don't agree, we're just hassling points here that we don't agree on, so why not let everybody do it in his own private way and put his reasons for why he wouldn't accept it or change it in the way he wants it.
That certainly could be expressed in any final vote. I think that the point of having something presented is the amended brethren in Southern California have already voted on this proposal. All of the suggestions to what we would incorporate into our proposal to send out are such as consistent with their, you know, what they voted on at that time. Otherwise, we create two entirely different. See, part of the thing is it's time to say either this is acceptable or not. We've gone as far as we can go. Ken and brethren have gone. They have gone as far as they can go with their community. This represents where they can go. The question is now we need to respond to that and say, can we come this far to meet them? Now, if we can, okay. If we can't, then. That's it. Other people can come along in another generation and take care of this. Okay. I'm 40 now. I can turn it over to somebody else. Karen, we're 40. So, that's what I would like to recommend. That if the idea is acceptable as it was originally worded and as it is in the assurances, if something can be worked out that expresses the same substance, then I would like to seek your approval for that, for whomever you vote to carry this on.
I think basically it's very well written. It expresses things very well. It's been done, I think, in a wonderful spirit, and I think we should commend all the brethren who have worked so hard on this. I think it's quite a labor. It's been going on forever. I think it's a good thing. Is it time to have a vote?
Well, where we are is you've heard finalized proposal in the way that we just mentioned, letters of assurance, the suggestions you've seen there, and the implementation procedure we have discussed. So in a sense, we have reviewed this. Bob, I think we come to the point of seeking a motion to accept this revised package, if you like.
For with the flexibility of
with the flexibility on that one point,
get the wording in the right order there or whatever.
If that, you know, brother would seek to do that, and then either approve or disapprove that being sent out. Which is
all right. So we're open to have a motion for the submission of this proposal. In a final form that isn't as in a dozen different sheets of paper like this, but is one package to the unamended community for their consideration.
Excuse me, just how would that be done? You just send this out, and then would you say, how do they approve or disapprove this?
There would be a ballot on the end of the proposal. It would be similar.
Similar
to the one that you got from the amended, you know, that's the one of the amended.
So there would be someplace to write if you disagree or what you prefer to have it.
Yes, right.
Okay. And there'll be a cover letter stating that if you don't agree or if you want to amend the wording.
You can
will know that by something stated in the document sent to them.
We can state that in the cover letter, yeah.
Yeah.
So if they'd like to.
Everyone understands that.
Sure, just add any comments you want.
We understand each other pretty well.
You want to do that, and it's all right, but there are more that are not here.
Right, that will be put clearly in.
Relative implementation, and you feel that that's been covered, eh?
We suggested an implementation procedure, yes.
Can we decide about the time of it, the 6 months or 12 months?
That would be, we haven't decided about the time, you're right. That you could also leave somewhat flexible.
Yeah, well, then something like that.
Time period, work it out, what would be reasonable, and allow some flexibility to come to the end of that period of time, and brother is saying, whoa, don't stuff this around us so fast, give us a little more time, then, you know, they could officially inform the brother in California that we need to have another 3 months or something.
Right, exactly.
Well, there's two kind of dates that are critical. One is the date for submission of the vote. And the second is the date for beginning of implementation.
Well, vote as soon as possible.
So it will be prepared, well, but the creatures need a time to then review it and vote on it. Let's say it's a month or a week or a year, or whatever it is that they need to do it in.
But that information has to be published.
Yeah.
And then it has to stay on
all in a cover letter.
Back. So if you give the committee the jurisdiction to handle that part of it. Okay. And then subsequent to that, there's that time period in which it will be presented to the rest of the
committee. Yeah. In the interest of godliness and justice, we're going to have a ton of legwork to do when this goes out. Now, we have already experienced misinformation, what's happened, and the result of it. A lot of the mail that we have received has been based on misinformation. It is essential, if we're going to draw a line around the state of California, and we're going to say that we don't want to harm anybody and we want everybody to have equal opportunity, if this is a viable, workable proposal, or thought to be by most of the brethren, then we have just tons of work ahead of us. And needs a younger man than me, I'm afraid. This is about to bankrupt me. But I can tell you right now, I could not make this fly in Mendocino unless we have that. I'll just make that statement flat-footedly. Unless we have adequate time to assure that there are no injustices done to the brethren, that everybody has an opportunity who wishes to accept this, to accept it.
So that's translating to the 12 months?
How much time, I don't know. Yes, 12 months or possibly more.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. Besides the problem of misinformation, I mean, we got a lot of negative feedback based on misinformation. We gotta try and head some of that off in the interest of truth, if nothing else.
Okay, with that understanding clarified, is there someone want to make the motion?
I'll move.
Okay, Brother Dan.
Yes.
Move that this proposal. Are you going to say it?
No.
I'm sorry.
Let me, I will.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I thought you were waiting for me to say it. Okay. Go ahead. No, that's good. I don't want to say it.
Okay, I make a motion that we submit this proposal to our unamended ecclesias with the deliberated proposed changes that took place last meeting and this meeting, with space allowed for comments on every item, and that we establish today a committee to handle it and deal with all the paperwork and have you.
first, and then comment.
Submit California Unity proposal with changes discussed, with space for comment on each item or on the ballot. Just space for comments. Space for comments, and you can.
Okay, comments are good enough, but you know. But they gotta have something to say if they
want to. Give the space, in other words, for people to say.
I think it's critical that we have that information.
Good. Submit California with changes as discussed, with space for comments.
Submit to the unamended
places
of California.
Submit California to the unamended ecclesias in California. Okay, that was one motion. You had a second part of that motion.
Pardon? Well, the second part was to be sure that the committee established to carry this out. All the rebuttal and everything that comes with it.
Well, that's part of the agenda.
I don't know.
Why don't we take that as the
motion? We'll take that as the second motion.
Yeah, right.
All right, okay. This is a motion. Submit the California Unity proposal with changes as discussed, with space for comment, to the unamended ecclesias in California.
Okay, is there further right?
Secret ballot.
Yes?
Yeah. Okay, we'll have secret ballot. Is there a second?
Individually submitted to individuals and ecclesias or to the ecclesias?
Individuals.
I think it should be on an individual basis.
Yeah.
That's fine.
They're interested. We'll be happy to share with them all the things we learned in the course of going through all those procedures and answering all those questions, like secret ballot, like whether or not you mail it to an individual, like how you're going to count them and when, and who you're going to invite to make sure everybody's happy.
They're not going to think about now at this motion.
No, yeah. I don't think Ray needs to just.
That's fine. We're prepared for that.
Because we handle it for a secret ballot.
So, is this your motion then? Submit California Unity proposal with changes discussed, with space for comments, to the individuals and the unamended ecclesias in California.
Right.
Is this the motion?
Take some time frame about the vote. Or vote as soon as it's reasonable.
Yeah, unless you want to state, feel it's necessary to state a specific time, why don't we leave it the way it is? All right, is there a second to the motion?
Yes.
Brother Eric seconds. Okay, is there any other discussion?
We've had enough
of it.
One comment is, I guess, it's been stated that two states have been for a vote.
Amen.
Submitted for a vote. That's what he's done, right? I'm sorry, I missed that part. Okay. All right. Probably can you pass out? Yeah, we got some paper torn up here.
What's that for?
That's a yes or vote.
For committee?
No, this is for
yes or a no.
A yes or a no or an abstention. Or just for this.
Yes or no or abstain.
Right, I'm saying one or, yeah, one or the other of those three possibilities. Marco?
Is this Bob?
Well, you know the mind of your wife. That's fine.
David, I will bring her.
a question about absentee votes. There's a number of brethren who are not here. I've got three absentee, well, I guess actually two at this point, absentee votes that have not seen all the changes. There might be a question whether they would approve of the changes. If you know that they would, then that's something.
Well, they can comment.
Maybe, but if not, I suppose.
Why would we wait to give us a vote if it's a problem?
Everyone's got their white uncle and everything else.
Okay. For the sake of simplicity, why don't we say that there's no absentee votes? I mean, I hate to qualify those not here, but.
So you don't
have
to
say
it together and I'm doing the same.
Right, that's right.
Well, if there is a close tie, maybe the one is going on here.
If there's a close tie, I think we got more to work on. What could I do with those votes? I lost your vote.
Wait a second.
Did I give you my vote? Did I give you my vote?